Welcome to the Hypnodojo, a place of learning for practitioners and students of hypnotherapy. Get your black belt in all things hypnotherapy as we whip into shape your mindset, mastery, and marketing. Relax, enjoy, learn. Here's your sensei, Linda Campbell.
Hi, and welcome to the Hypno Dojo. In this episode, I want to talk about something that could literally be a lifesaver for you someday. It's a mindset piece. It's about preventing burnout in your practice. The field of hypnotherapy attracts people who are empathetic, who are big-hearted, and also who have a tendency to nurture or caretake other people. And this can be to the detriment of the practitioner. A study of therapists done in 2007 suggested that 85% of the participants either had some degree of indication that burnout was something they should be paying attention to, or indications that they were already burnt out with some kind of situation that might be threatening to their physical or mental well-being. So this is a topic that is really important for us to pay attention to. In fact, it's a topic that comes up every time I teach hypnotherapy certification. So I want to give you some suggestions and tips as to how you can prevent burnout. Now first, I want to say that I believe this is less of a problem if you are properly trained as a hypnotherapist. There was a study done in 1970 by Dr. Alfred Berrios that was printed in American Health magazine as well as in the journal Psychotherapy Theory, Research, and Practice that stated that hypnotherapy was 93% effective after 6 sessions. That's in comparison to psychotherapy that the study said was only 38% effective after 600 sessions. According to the same study, behavior therapy was 72% effective after 22 sessions. Now, I don't know about those numbers for psychotherapy. That seems like a lot of sessions for not a lot of results. But I have seen a lot of clients who have gone that route. And although they understand where their symptoms stem from, they can psychoanalyze themselves with great skill, they still have their symptoms. And the results that Dr. Berrios quoted with regards to hypnotherapy is pretty consistent with what I see with my clients. In other words, when you're doing hypnosis well, people get better and they move on. And that means less burnout for the therapist. And so that's my first tip. Get really good hypnotherapy training. I have a rule for myself that I want to see my clients making some kind of noticeable improvement within the first couple of sessions. And if that doesn't happen, I'm moving on to do some deeper work to find out what we've missed. And so if you're not getting results within the first couple of sessions, you might want to look into getting some more training or learning some new techniques. Hypnosis is really powerful when we do it correctly. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad hypnosis going on out there and a lot of bad training. To get results, you need to be uncovering and addressing the cause of the symptoms, not just suggesting away symptoms. This is what I mean by bad hypnosis. There's a lot of hypnosis going on out there where basically what's happening is a person is resting passively in a chair with their eyes closed in a state of hypnosis while the hypnotist is reading to them a generic script. Not good hypnosis. Let me go into that a little bit more deeply. When I was trained, I was basically taught get a client into a deep state of hypnosis and then again read them the generic script. Now, I had my first weight loss client, and this changed everything for me. She wanted to cut back on portions. She wanted to work on portion control. And so for the first couple of sessions, I was doing the standard, you eat only when you're hungry, you cut back your portions, reading her the portion control script and hoping that she would get results. Well, after a couple of sessions, not only was she not getting results, she was actually gaining weight, not what either her or I were looking for. Now, I wasn't trained how to deal with that. I was just under the assumption that if they were deep in hypnosis, things would improve. So out of exasperation during that session, I said aloud, "There must be some reason why you are not getting results." And much to my surprise, because I was never taught that the client could talk to me in hypnosis, my client started talking. She started telling me a story about being 7 years old and her grandmother had been sick and was in hospice and my client was being taken to see grandmother over and over and over. Now she didn't really understand what was going on. She just saw that grandma got skinnier, skinnier, skinnier and eventually died. Now, as she was telling me the story, I realized that she still had a belief on a subconscious level that weight loss and death were somehow associated. I could have done a million sessions telling her to cut back her portions, but without addressing that belief that losing weight was going to be threatening to her, we never would have gotten anywhere. We have to identify what the belief is that's going on a subconscious level and then address that belief. The subconscious is primarily protective. If the subconscious thinks weight loss is threatening, it's not going to let the client lose weight, no matter how many sessions you do or how brilliantly phrased your suggestions are. It's not true that having a client deep in hypnosis is enough. Again, the job of the subconscious is self-preservation, and so if you're giving a suggestion to the client that on a subconscious level is seen as threatening, that suggestion is not going to be taken in. There's another problem with this theory that we just need to get them deep and suggest away their symptoms. That problem is, not everybody goes that deep. We get a lot of clients coming to see us who are analytical. Somebody who is analytical is going to hang out a little lighter to listen to and follow along and analyze the session. And so people go into whatever range of hypnosis is most natural for them. And to try to push a person deeper into hypnosis out of their comfort zone can interfere with rapport. Now, there's other reasons why people don't go that deep into hypnosis. If somebody is new to hypnosis, new to the practitioner, if they're nervous or curious about hypnosis, they might hang out a little lighter just to hear what's going on, make sure that they're safe. Also, the thing that a client is coming in for can interfere with their depth as well. For example, if you have a client who has difficulty with trust or difficulty with letting go of control, the fact that they may not have developed trust in you yet or feel like going into hypnosis is losing control, that might interfere with their depth as well, at least until those challenges are worked out. So the bottom line here is get good training. Make sure that your training covers how to uncover and address the cause of the client's symptom. Don't be seduced by training that offers a 3,000-page script book, but you're not getting any feedback and you're not learning how to uncover cause. Uncovering cause is essential. And obviously, when it comes to the topic of preventing burnout in your practice, the quicker your clients are recovering and moving on, the less likely you are to become burnt out. Tip number two is to be aware of your own triggers. We all have stuff, and working with certain clients will bring up our stuff. We are all a work in progress. For example, if you've experienced a lot of losses in your life and you haven't fully processed or dealt with those losses, it may be particularly difficult for you to work with a client who's had a recent loss. If you have kind of a sensitivity there, a hot button, and that hot button gets poked by your client's challenges, it's going to be more difficult for you to focus on your client. And again, there's a risk of you becoming burned out by dealing with these clients who are constantly poking your hot buttons. So know what your hot buttons are. Know what things you've not dealt with, and either avoid working with clients who have those same challenges, or better yet, do your own work. Either work with a therapist or do self-hypnosis. We have this powerful tool available to us that we should be employing on ourselves, just as we use them to better other people's lives. Use hypnosis to work through whatever your hot buttons are so that you can be focused on a client and not have those things coming up for you. The next tip is to basically ritualize the beginning and end of your session time or the beginning and end of your day. This helps your mind to recognize now I'm working and now I'm not, so that you're able to kind of switch on and switch off. You're not carrying your client's stuff with you into the remainder of your day. Now, there's a lot of different ways to ritualize the beginning and end of your day or your session. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of ideas. When I'm seeing clients, when it's a day where I'm working with clients, I begin my day by taking out all of their folders and then organizing them in the order of who I'm seeing first. And then I basically put my hands on the folders and close my eyes and I talk a bit to the universe. I basically ask the universe to work with me and through me to guide me to say and do whatever is in the best interest of these clients to help them to achieve the goals they've set for themselves in coming to see me. Now, not only does this help me to kind of feel connected to divine guidance, I'm not doing these sessions on my own. I've got some help, some support from the powers that be. But it also helps me to, again, ritualize the beginning of my time with my clients. As soon as I take those folders out and organize them and close my eyes, I'm switching over from my regular being at home mode to my I'm now in working mode. And then at the end of the day, I put all those folders away and I thank in my mind the clients for trusting me to work with their goals and for, you know, coming to me in their times of challenge. And so I'm doing a little talk to the universe to switch on, and then I'm doing a thank you to the clients to switch off. That's my ritual. But again, there's lots of different ways to switch on and switch off. At one point, I lived within walking distance of my office, and I would use the walk as an opportunity to switch on and off. When I was walking to work, I would begin focusing on my day, who I was seeing, what kind of goals we were working on, any administrative stuff that I need to take care of. And so I used the walk to start planning how my day was going to go. And then at the end of the day, I would use the walk again, this time in a bit of a different way, to help me transition to being back in being at home mode. So on my walk home, I would imagine whatever the weather was, I'd use the weather to just kind of get off of me any of the details of the day. So for example, if it was sunny, I would imagine the sun just burning off any of the details of the day, anything belonging to the clients. If it was windy, I would imagine the wind blowing all of that stuff away. So I would just use whatever the weather was to imagine this kind of cleansing that was occurring during my walk. Now, you could also do something like donning the wardrobe of practitioner, either symbolically or literally, as a way of marking out the beginning and end of the day. So for example, now I'm working at home. I put on work clothes to see my clients, even though they can't see me from the waist down. My work clothes mark out to me, I'm now in professional mode. I can put on my comfy pants later when I'm just hanging out on the couch. I had a client who was also a therapist who would switch on and off using music. There was a particular song that she associated with her home life. She would often put it on when she was doing housekeeping, that sort of thing. And so she started listening to that song on her bus ride on the way home as a way of reminding her subconscious to let go of all of the details of the day and to focus now on being back in her regular home life. Now, you could use anything to ritualize the beginning or end of the day. You could use a singing bowl or a tuning fork, use the energy of music to shift on or shift off. You could even use incense or something like that, but keep in mind that a client in hypnosis has heightened senses, and so they might be bothered by the smell of incense. And so that's tip number 3, finding some way to symbolically or physically ritualize the beginning or end of your day so that, again, your mind recognizes, now I'm at home, now I'm working with clients, and there's a clear separation between the two. Tip number 4 is all about staying focused on the client. And this is particularly useful if something comes up during the session that you find yourself responding to, being triggered by, being moved by. We want to make sure that our time with the client is always about the client. Now, having said that, there will be times where people share something with you that's moving or that brings up emotion for you. And, you know, it would be a bit robotic to not be affected by that. But we want to make sure that we're not affected to the degree that the client is now worried about us. As soon as the client is worried that we now need some support from them, the roles have reversed and we're no longer any good for the client. And so my trick here is to just remain curious about the client. When the client shares something with me, in my mind, I'm thinking about, I wonder how that came to be, or I wonder what happened that the client has this pattern or this way of being. And then there's a part of my mind that's also thinking about strategies or techniques that I can use in hypnosis. And so my way of not being overwhelmed by anything that the client is giving me is to stay in my professional mode. And maybe this is a bit of a left brain, right brain thing. Our right brain is our emotional mind. Our left brain is our more clear thinking, logical, strategy, planning mind. And so one way to keep yourself from going into intense emotion working with a client is to stay in your left brain somewhat. To be thinking about patterns or techniques or strategies that you can use with the client, to be thinking about how you're going to help the client improve their situation, or be thinking about what you're hearing from the client and what that means as far as techniques you might use or direction you might take in hypnosis. And so again, that's tip number 4. Stay focused on the client, keep curious about them, stay in your professional mode. By doing so, you're less likely to pick up on the stuff that's going on for the client and begin to own it. Now, tip number 5 is all about having a good support system. Now, this might be somebody who's really in your corner who you can talk to about things that are bothering you. It may or may not be related to your practice or your clients, but just keeping on top of your own stuff so that you're not going into doing sessions feeling anxious or stressed and thereby more likely to be affected by what's going on with your clients. It's really useful to have a supervisor that you work with, somebody that you can talk to about your clients who can give you advice or strategies or even just support you while you vent. Working with people who are in crises, working with people who have trauma, working with people who are dealing with significant challenges, again, can be something that takes a toll on the practitioner. So we need sometimes to have somebody who caretakes us, somebody that we can go to and say, hey, you know what, I'm really struggling with something a client shared with me. Can I take some time to just talk about it and have you hold space for me while I do? Now, this might also be your classmates. If you're still a student of hypnosis, stay in touch with the people that you took your training with. These are like-minded people who know about hypnosis and who are also working with clients who will be able to offer you support or be there for you if you're struggling. And so I really encourage my students to keep in touch with one another, and often my groups of students stay bonded long after the class is over. I jokingly talk about how the muggles don't necessarily understand the stuff we talk about when we're in class, and so it's important to keep in touch with your woo-woo friends so that you've got that source of support. So tip number 6 for preventing burnout is another mindset piece, and this is all about how you look at the client. Now, there's a bunch of presuppositions that I give my students at the beginning of class that I ask them to entertain while they're in class with me. One of those presuppositions is that people are not broken, therefore they do not need to be fixed. Another presupposition is that the client has within them all of the resources needed in order to resolve their symptoms. Now, I do an exercise sometimes with my students where I have them pick somebody on the Zoom screen, teaching classes on Zoom now, and to just focus on that person and imagine that person being broken, being helpless, not having any solutions within them, being somebody who's really dysfunctional. And I ask them to really notice how that feels, to think of their client or their classmate in that way. Now, inevitably, when I ask my students what it felt like to do that exercise, they feel drained, they feel lacking in energy, they feel like they don't know what to do for that client. It makes them feel depressed and down to think of another person that way. And so we need to adopt a mindset that our client has solutions within them, that they're resourceful, that their behavior or symptoms make sense. The symptoms always make sense when you understand the context in which they were formed. Let me give you an example. I had a client who came to see me who had a fear of kittens, which sounds to people from the outside like a strange thing to be afraid of. And in fact, the people in her life didn't really understand this phobia and would do things like send her pictures of kittens and buy her kitten calendars. Oh, hilarious, right? Well, when we looked at this symptom in hypnosis and understood where it came from, it made perfect sense. My client recalled being a child and finding a stray cat and bringing it home, and the cat was pregnant and had kittens, and her father didn't want any kittens around, and so he actually flushed the kittens down the toilet. Now, my client, being a kid at the time, couldn't wrap her head around how Dad could do such a horrific thing. She couldn't accept the idea that her dad would do something like this to a vulnerable kitten. I think the thinking is, well, if he could do something like that to a vulnerable kitten, am I safe? And so she couldn't go there in her own mind. She had to buy into this idea that maybe the kittens were dangerous. Maybe Dad was trying to protect her. And so she formed this belief that kittens were dangerous, and then that belief just held over time. So again, just a little sidestep here when I was talking earlier about just giving a person suggestions. As long as the subconscious thinks that kittens are dangerous, no amount of kittens are fine, touch kittens, you love kittens is going to work. We have to identify the cause of what's going on. And so in this case, even though that looked like a strange thing to be afraid of, when you understand the context in which a symptom was formed, it often always makes perfect sense. So, if we look at our clients as being broken or dysfunctional or having weird issues, if we think of them as helpless or hopeless, then of course we're going to experience burnout, because if we think of somebody as helpless or hopeless, then what the heck can we do to make their situation better? But if instead we work on holding the mindset that our client makes sense, that their symptoms are understandable when we know where they've come from, when we hold the mindset that the client is resourceful, your client has within them their own subconscious mind. The subconscious is your long-term memory. We can trace back any symptom in hypnosis and identify where it came from. So the client does have within them everything that we need to know or understand in order to resolve their symptoms. When you hold that opinion of your client, it changes everything. So I was talking about the exercise I do in class where I have them pick a classmate and think of that classmate as dysfunctional and hopeless. Well, thankfully, I also turn it around and we do it where we pick the same classmate, and this time we think of that person as full of resources, full of wisdom, full of answers. They have within them everything they need to resolve whatever their symptoms are. And then notice what comes up for you when you think of your classmate that way. Well, of course, now you get curious, you get excited, you get energized, you're looking forward to working with them because you can't wait to get in there and determine what's going on and help them to find a solution to whatever their symptom is. It completely changes how you work with that person and how you feel about working with that person. And so that's tip number 6. Adopt a mindset of your client being healthy, your client being capable, your client making sense, and your client having within them all of the resources that they need to turn things around. I tell you, thinking of your client that way will leave you energized in working with them. It will keep you from hanging on to their stuff. Now, tip number 7 is all about using visualization to communicate to your subconscious how you want to be when you're working with your clients. Now, the subconscious is the creative mind, so it understands visualization, it understands imagery and symbolism. When you use imagery, you're speaking to your subconscious in a language it really gets. So for example, you might imagine that you have some kind of protective barrier that allows you to work with your client but not have any of their stuff kind of stick to you. I had somebody come in and do a talk to my class once who gave us a really good visualization that he was taught as a therapist himself for working with his clients. It was the visualization of a hollow bone. Now, a bone is hollow on the inside so that the bone marrow can go through, and the bone is also very slippery on the inside, shiny, so that nothing sticks to it. So he would sometimes imagine being like a hollow bone, where the client's stuff would kind of come at him and through him, but none of it would stick. And just doing that visualization before he saw his clients, again, was kind of a reminder to his own subconscious that he can be intuitively and empathically connected to the client, but their stuff is not going to stick to him. So I hope that's given you some good ideas as to how you might prevent burnout in your own practice. And if you have techniques that you use, I would really love to hear them. Please post in the comments any ideas that you have. I really appreciate you tuning in to this episode of the Hypno Dojo. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Okay, take one with corrections with Campbell. Campbell. Okay. Get your black belt in all things hypnotherapy and blah, blah, blah.